Hello, Ready to Run listeners. This is Lindsay Hine. I'm the founder of Sandy Boy Productions and the host of the podcast, I'll Have Another with Lindsay Hine. And why is everyone yelling with Lindsay Hine? And we are so excited that Two Before is supporting all of the shows in the Sandy Boy Productions podcast network. What is Two Before? It is a natural sports performance superfood made from New Zealand blackcurrant berries, which boast exceptionally high antioxidant levels proven to enhance athletic performance. A little bit sweet, a little bit tangy, this berry will help you get more out of the work you put in. Blackberry currants improve endurance by increasing blood flow, making it more efficient for the body to pump oxygenated, nutrient-rich blood to the muscles. You can kickstart your recovery by reducing muscle soreness and managing inflammation and strengthen your immunity. Immune-boosting antioxidants and naturally occurring vitamin C are in the black currant berries, okay? So you just drink this 30 to 45 minutes before your workout. You combine their powder with 4 to 8 ounces of water, juice, or electrolyte mix. I just use water and shake it up. I've been using this before intense workouts and love how it's making me feel. And you all can try it out and get 30% off. Two Before is offering an exclusive limited time offer to the listeners. 30% off for 20 packs plus free shipping when you use the code Lindsay at checkout. Just go to twobefore.com. That's the number twobefore.com and use the code Lindsay at checkout. All right, I will hand it over to your host. Enjoy this episode of Ready to Run.
Welcome to the Ready to Run podcast. I'm your co-host, Efren Kabalius, and I'm a sports medicine physician.
I'm your co-host, Kurt Roser, and I'm a physical therapist. We're based out of the Boulder, Colorado area and have a passion for working with endurance athletes of all abilities. The goal of our podcast is to engage in thoughtful discussions with athletes, coaches, and clinicians to share knowledge within the field of sports medicine and inspire progression in the sport of running.
We hope to empower individuals to navigate injuries, reduce injury risk, optimize training and performance, and provide listeners with the tools needed to get ready to run.
You'll be able to listen to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts. Subscribe and leave a rating and review to let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear on the show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Ready to Run Podcast, as well as our website, readytorunpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Ready to Run podcast. We're back after a summer break, full of time spent running outdoors and enjoying the weather in Boulder, Colorado, and we hope you've been able to do much of the same. Over the next few weeks, we'll provide some short episodes on common injuries in runners. We'll highlight some of the current evidence and clinical pearls to know if you're a runner, coach, or healthcare provider who takes care of runners. Fall marathon training is in full gear, and many of the injuries we'll discuss are ones seen in practice. And we hope our listeners can take away some meaningful information from the things we've learned from managing running injuries and use this information to empower yourself to understand your injury and find the best way to navigate the system to ensure that you're ready to run. This first episode in the series will focus on sacrum bone stress injuries. Sacral bone stress injuries often go undetected or can be puzzling to patients and clinicians since they often present similarly to common conditions such as low back pain, hamstring tendon injuries, and gluteal tendon injuries. Early diagnosis is important to minimize the impact on the athlete's training, and it's important to have an acute awareness of the presenting complaints and have a high index of suspicion as these injuries often have a vague presentation. Many athletes often see multiple healthcare providers before arriving to a diagnosis of a sacral bone stress injury. Oftentimes, when I've seen it in my practice, the athlete presents with gradual onset or vague unilateral low back pain or buttock pain that may have been treated for several weeks as low back pain, but will show up frustrated often with worsening symptoms. So let's start by defining some of the anatomy. So what is the sacrum? The sacrum is a bone that is shaped like a shield at the base of the spine and is comprised of 5 vertebral segments that are fused together. The sacrum sits between two iliac bones of the pelvis and helps to distribute weight from the spine into the lower legs and the feet. Because of its role in transferring weight and force, it can also be vulnerable to injury. Now, we've talked about bone stress injuries in our previous episode with Nathan Carlson, which was a two-part series where we first talked about the recognition and then the second part where we talked about the treatment. So we'll just go through a brief overview here. So what characterizes a bone stress injury? So bone stress injuries are common injuries amongst runners and reported to have an annual incidence of about 20%. Bone stress injuries often occur when there's an imbalance between the breakdown of bone and the body's ability to repair bone. These injuries occur along a continuum such that the accumulation of micro damage may progress from the bone being in a state of a stress reaction to as much as a stress fracture or a complete fracture. So on an MRI, a stress reaction, which would be the earliest signs of an injury, would show signs of marrow edema or something called periosteal reaction. And as it progresses, may eventually result in a fracture. So in simpler terms, the way I describe it is that the bone will typically swell from the inside out and then cracks. What is a sacral bone stress injury? Bone stress injuries can occur in three regions of the sacrum. The first one is just lateral to the sacral foramina, which would affect the wing. The second type would be affecting the sacral foramina. And the third type, which is the most serious, would be to affect the sacral body. And injuries here may involve injury to the spinal canal and result in neurological signs, such as weakness and numbness and tingling. So what are the signs and symptoms? Well, these are often hard to detect. So these patients will typically present with deep and diffuse pain around the low back and buttock, usually on one side. Pain is typically aggravated with impact activities such as running, and if left unchecked, can even present with walking and standing. So on exam, you may find tenderness on palpation in the region of the sacrum or the sacroiliac joint. There are certain provocative tests to assess the SI joint, which may also elicit symptoms such as compression or SI joint maneuvers such as a Ganzlin's test. They'll also present with pain on impact testing. So one of the things we'll assess for is their ability to tolerate low amplitude plyometrics such as pogo hops, where you're hopping short height on both legs, or single leg hops. Now it's important to note that no pain on impact testing doesn't necessarily exclude a sacral stress injury. So we talked about how these can mimic other types of injuries. So it's important to keep a wide differential when you're evaluating these and keep an open mind. And when you're seeing these injuries, and kind of our job as healthcare providers is to think about the wide array of symptoms that this possibly could present with and try to rule in or rule out certain conditions. So other things in the differential diagnosis could include low back pain with referral, such as a nerve root irritation or nerve root compression, the L5-S1 region. Certainly you can see SI joint dysfunction at this area and deep gluteal syndrome. So these are the things I'm considering as I'm evaluating these patients. So that brings us to imaging. So how do we detect these injuries? Well, as we know, with a lot of stress injuries, X-rays can pick up some sacral stress fractures, but oftentimes it's usually inadequate to show most stress injuries, particularly if they present in the early stages. So definitive diagnosis typically requires an MRI, and knowing what type of MRI is also important. So typically if I'm concerned about a stress fracture of the sacrum, I'm ordering an MRI of the pelvis. I've had some instances where the diagnosis wasn't quite certain, and maybe the initial working impression was a low back pain, and the patient may have arrived with a lumbar spine MRI, but imaging such as a lumbar spine MRI would actually cut off at the region that you're most interested in, so wouldn't offer a complete evaluation of the sacrum itself. Same goes for a hip MRI. Now, certainly these are useful if you're considering other pieces of your diagnosis, but to detect an actual sacrum stress injury, you want to MRI the pelvis.
Hey friends, Lindsay Hine here, founder of Sandy Boy Productions, host of the podcast I'll Have Another with Lindsay Hine. And we are so excited to have Sidekick Tool joining the Sandy Boy Productions podcast network as a sponsor. If you have not used Sidekick Tool yet, let me tell you, it is an amazing tool for recovery. You can just use three easy steps for pain relief to help you get back to doing what you love. The Sidekick tool can help you with shin splints, neck pain, hip pain, shoulder injuries, Achilles tendinopathy, knee pain, IT band pain, back pain, so many things. It is skin safe and it's effective. The unique edge works deeply into your muscles without causing any damage. It's an effortless massage, and the tool's weight handles the workload, and the versatile shape works on the full body. I use Sidekick tool on the bottoms of my feet to avoid plantar fasciitis. And I know a lot of professionals like Molly Seidel and Sarah Hall use this tool. There is a long list of benefits to muscle scraping. The therapy stimulates multiple mechanisms to decrease pain and promote recovery. And the good news is you all can check it out. Just go to sidekicktool.com/RTR and use the code READYTORUN for a 15% discount. All right, friends, enjoy the rest of the show.
Okay, so moving on to treatment. So treatment focuses on looking at all of the factors that may contribute to sacral bone stress injury. This can include training errors, energy availability, and bone health, just to name a few. So when you see these, the initial step is to first just deload the affected bone, decrease pain, and restore pain-free walking. During the initial healing phase, we typically recommend cessation of running. If there's any pain with weight bearing, crutches may be used for a short period of time until the athlete can walk pain-free. Once the athlete can walk pain-free for household distances, then we'll discontinue crutches and transition to full weight bearing, then progress as tolerated. The time from injury onset and initiation of a staged return to run is typically 8 to 12 weeks. So this is longer than some of your other typical type of stress injuries, and we'll go into the science as to why. So it's important to give the athlete and coach a range rather than a specific timeline. That's one thing I've learned over the years with taking care of endurance athletes of all levels, is if you give the time frame of 4 weeks or 6 weeks, oftentimes the athlete will hold you to it. And if things are not better by that point in time, then we can raise doubts as to your treatment approach. So usually it's safe to give a range, and also know that if there are certain other risk factors that may contribute to slower healing, to set that expectation early and detect those things early as well. So once an athlete is pain-free with walking, the next goal is to guide them through a symptom-led progressive exposure to bone loading. It's also important to know that, yes, while you can start cross-training early on, it's also okay to rest for a short period of time. Oftentimes, we see these injuries and we know that, complete rest for an extended period of time is not necessarily productive, and it may actually be counterproductive, but an initial period of rest and time off from all sport or cross training is okay too. So we talked about timeline. Well, on a physiologic level, bone remodeling in a cortical bone takes about 3 months, as described by Stuart Warden in a paper in 2021. And we actually know that in trabecular bone, this process actually takes longer. So what are cortical bone and trabecular bone? The way I describe the different layers of bone is to think of an M&M, right? So cortical bone is the thick outer layer, whereas trabecular bone is the soft inner layer. So examples of cortical bone stress injuries may include the tibia and the metatarsals. Pain is fairly noticeable early in the injury process. In contrast, trabecular or spongy bone type stress injuries include the sacrum, pelvis, and calcaneus or heel bone. So we used to think of trabecular bone injuries as low risk. However, recent studies suggest that trabecular bone injuries, such as those seen in the sacrum, are actually associated with longer healing times and longer return to sport timelines. So we want to give special consideration to the pelvis and other proximal bone stress injuries, such as those in the hip and pelvis, as these are often associated with relative energy deficiency in sport, otherwise known as red S. This may be due to a higher composition of trabecular-rich bone in these areas. So we've discussed the elements of red S on previous episodes, but here we pay particular attention to the association of sacral bone stress injuries and bone health. So what do we mean by bone health? Bone health refers to the ability of the skeleton to absorb the workloads of running and describes architectural features such as cortical thickness, bone mineral density, and bone geometry. Having low bone mineral density is correlated with a higher risk of bone stress injury. Bone mineral density can be quantified via a DEXA scan. So when we order a DEXA scan in athletes, we're particularly interested in assessing scores in weight-bearing sites, such as the lumbar spine, hip, and femoral neck. In young athletes, we evaluate bone density by looking at the Z-scores. These are scored as standard deviations compared against patients of similar age and sex. So according to the American College of Sports Medicine, a lone bone mineral density score for premenopausal female athletes is a Z-score of -1 to -2, while osteoporosis is considered when there is a Z-score of -2. And there are just different classification schemes which describe different risk factors of what defines low bone density versus osteoporosis. But the important thing to highlight here is the association with sacral stress injuries. So in a study by Michael Fredrickson out of Stanford in 2003, 7 of 12 female athletes with sacral stress fractures were found to have low bone density on DEXA, while 2 of the 12 female athletes had severely low bone density. Additionally, 2 of the 9 males with sacral stress fractures met criteria for low bone density. And in that same study by Fredrickson, 9 of the 12 female athletes were also found to be amenorrheic, meaning they had loss of menstrual cycle. Amenorrhea and oligomenorrhea, which is loss of period and irregular period, is a hallmark sign of a female athlete with lower energy availability. So you can refer back to our previous episodes with Dr. Aubrey Armento and Amanda McCarthy, who's a registered dietitian, as well as our episode with professional runner Jake Riley and Maddie Alm, who is a professional runner and registered dietitian. So in both episodes, we discuss Red S in detail if you want to learn more. But an important takeaway from today's discussion is that if you are seeing a sacral bone stress injury, it's important to screen these athletes for Red S and refer to the appropriate members of the team, which may include a registered dietitian or an endocrinologist in some cases. So on to the rehabilitation. So once an athlete is pain-free with walking, they can also begin non-impact or low-impact cross-training, including swimming, aqua jogging, and cycling during the early stages to maintain cardiovascular fitness. Now, one thing to note is that sometimes the seated position of cycling can be aggravating to the sacrum, so if you need to transition to a recumbent bike or just exclude that exercise altogether, that's okay. From there, we can progress to prescribed amounts of walking. And what the literature has shown and what I found in practice is that a walking program allows for a smoother transition for the actual return to run phase, likely because it leads to greater exposure to ground contact loads. And we think that this may stimulate some of the osteoblast production to help build new bone when performed in a controlled manner. We also recommend working with a physical therapist to address any strength or biomechanical deficits. So one of the reasons people get stress injuries is that when muscles become weakened or fatigued, their ability to attenuate impact load is lessened, resulting in increases in skeletal bone loading and increased risk of bone stress injury. So we want to address this with our exercise prescription and target the lumbopelvic region and any other deficits along the kinetic chain. So in simple terms, we need to place just enough stress through the bone with weight-bearing activities to promote bone remodeling while minimizing excessive stress that may worsen or impair bone healing. And then we also want to distribute the stress across big muscles that are really good at absorbing load. While easy to say, that can be challenging in practice. So having a physical therapist who can monitor the supervision becomes quite useful. So the big question always becomes, well, when can the athlete return to running? So while it's not routine practice to order follow-up imaging in the setting of most bone stress injuries, I will often repeat an MRI for sacral bone stress injuries before starting a return to run progression, since these are higher risk injuries and the symptoms are so poorly detected in the first place that it can be helpful to have some sort of objective measure of healing so that we can avoid any false starts once we resume training. And in a study by Fredrickson, he looked at sacral stress injuries and found that in the 21 runners evaluated who were found to have high-grade sacral bone stress injuries, they were cleared to return to run between 8 to 12 weeks post-diagnosis and were able to resume pre-injury training workloads between 3 to 6 months. So some of the key tips I provide my patients are to restore volume before adding intensity. While the risk of bone stress injury increases linearly with volume, there's an exponential risk, increased risk, when increasing intensity. So it's important to set clear parameters on training sessions and only progress loads if there are no reports of discomfort during or after running. I would also recommend setting up your athlete for success by ensuring clear communication between the athlete, coach, and medical team throughout the process. So in summary, it's important to have a high index of suspicion for sacral bone stress injuries, especially when the runner presents with vague, unilateral, low back pain or buttock pain. Early identification and diagnosis can help to minimize the time lost from sport. You'll also want to set expectations that a successful return to training following sacral bone stress injury is possible, but will often take months, not weeks, and necessitates evaluation of the athlete's training load, fueling strategies, biomechanics, and bone health. We hope you enjoy these types of episodes. We'll have more to come in the next few weeks as many runners prepare for a busy fall marathon season. If you like what you've heard on today's episode, then leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and follow us on Instagram at Ready to Run Podcast. We welcome any questions that come in. Thanks for tuning in.